And welcome back to another episode of the Truth and Transparency Podcast with your host, Brother X, and
the Cultured Scientist.
And here on the Truth and Transparency Podcast, we talk openly and honestly about everything in between, why we can't get right in 2023. And first and foremost, I know we haven't said in a while, but thank you to all the supporters for like running up the numbers, both on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, all the different social medias. Continue to support us. We'll continue to support y'all. Appreciate y'all for all the support. I know we're winding down. We're getting close to the end of season 3 of the podcast. So we got like one more after this. It'll be our 100th episode. So please tune in for that. Also run up the numbers from last week's episode as well. Just run up those numbers. And before we go any further, we will be remiss if we didn't introduce the man, the myth, the legend, the man who eats the OPR eggs in the morning with his bacon, Mr. Smith himself.
Wow. Just wow. Hope that joke will forever just be one of the funniest things ever in life. I tell you. Anywho, it is your favorite fed, Mr. Smith, also known as the Soundbite Poppy, and also known as And I want to thank all the listeners for the comments, the plays, the subscriptions. Keep feeding us and we'll keep feeding y'all. Number one, shout out to the Chaotic Culture Podcast for always showing us love and support. Keep running those numbers up as well. Number two, I'm trying to figure out how this YouTuber or whatever the hell he is by the name of Punch May Dev made an entire song about scamming. Like legit wire fraud. Like step-by-step instructions of how to commit wire fraud.
That's why.
Which it would be different if you never saw his face. But we see his face. So technically speaking, authorities can charge him with conspiracy to commit wire fraud. But I don't know. That's just weird to me. And then the last thing, I don't know what the hell is going on in social media streets, but there's such a thing as an NPC fetish, which listeners, if you don't know.
Yeah, I heard about that. I unfortunately saw it on the social media streets. Continue.
Yeah. So listeners, if you don't know what NPC stands for, in the gaming world, the NPC stands for non-playable character. So it's basically those people that you see like in Grand Theft Auto, you just see people walking down the street. Those are non-playable characters. Well, apparently there's a fetish going on or some type of something. I don't know. But it's basically folks acting like NPC characters and are getting money for it. And I'm trying to figure out who are these people that got this money to be giving away for NPC characters, because the Truth and Transparency Podcast will be taking donations.
Money.
Funds.
Dollar bills, y'all.
Skrilla. Stripper bucks.
Y'all and these damn stripper bucks. Just, I can't.
We enjoy the company of a nice young lady or multiple ones, demonstrating what the Lord has bequeathed them.
Nope. I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Continue.
But that is pretty crazy, because the funniest thing is like there's one girl, I think it's like Pink Baby or something like that was the name of one of them. But apparently Timbaland was up in her broadcast. Like Timbaland, like producer Timbaland was up in his her streams like donating. But the crazy part is, I think I read one report was that she was making like 10K a month, I think it was.
That is ridiculous. I mean, yeah. Don't get me wrong, it's still gotta get taxed. But just to even make 10K a month, that's 120 grand a year.
Yeah.
Streaming.
Yes.
I'm in the wrong business. That's all I'm going to say. I'm in the wrong freaking business.
I'm going to say one last thing about that, because again,
I feel about the day of coordinators.
You are not lying. But shout out to our day of coordinator. We love you. If you're listening to the podcast, we appreciate you, and your money is on the way. Got to make that clear. The really crazy thing was in one of her videos that I saw, she had one of those like curling irons or flat irons, and she is making popcorn with the flat iron, like has a whole kernel inside the flat iron. Just ridiculous. But Before we go any further, we're actually going to take a moment to do our mental health check. We're actually going to take some time, see where everybody's mental is at. Mr. Smith, would you like to go first?
Sure. So since we talked last time, listeners, teacher-based family came up to visit. There is a big church conference going on in my state of Maryland. So the family, a lot of pastors and bishops and others, you know, very people of the Lord, we'll say, came up. And so teacher-based sister and brother-in-law, along with their three kids, stayed with us for a couple of days. Definitely had to get, definitely got some good family time going to the pool. And they surprised me and Teacher Bay by asking us to be the godparents of their newest daughter. So me and Teacher Bay are now the proud godparents of their youngest daughter. And, you know, it was so kind of surreal because we were just like, wait, that like us, like us, you sure? Like you want us? And you know, when you, if you listeners, I mean, I'm obviously not gonna put their information out there like that, but if you would ever see this little girl's face, you couldn't say no. I'm sorry, she is adorable. So you know, we definitely felt good, even though me and Teacher Bay kind of looked at each other, was like, dang, we're godparents of like five different kids. And their sister was like, wait, what? Like, hold on. Who was the five kids? So we each had to go back and was like, okay, so I got these two, and then you got these two, and then you got this one. It was like, dang. I was like, what?
Wait, hold on. Please tell me y'all were not talking about y'all trying to do a bid for a space with these god kids.
I mean, listen, we got five and a possible. We now are godparents of six. Yeah. Now six, but five separately, but pretty much six. So yeah, no, outside of that, like I said, I just enjoyed the time and company, got to, you know, take the young boys and dunk them in the pool or flip them on the beanbag. And they're at that age where they're just like, more, give us more, throw us some more. We're like, okay, yeah, we're going to tire y'all out. Cause y'all ain't going to bed. But outside of that, just been working and, just staying low, staying to the ground. And listeners, I apologize. Our social media has been a little, you know, lacking of content, but we've been working on things behind the scenes. So you guys will be seeing stuff very, very shortly.
Yeah. We got to get some more funds. We might have to hire a social media coordinator. We might have to actually pay them, but who knows?
No comment.
I guess I'll go next. I guess mentally, I am in a space, especially, I know we've talked about it multiple episodes about wedding and school stuff, and it's just in a challenging place. It is very difficult to try to navigate a lot of these waters and a lot of the deadlines, and things are starting to get a lot closer. So I keep speaking for myself. I know that I'm definitely feeling that pressure. It's a lot of weight. And I had a very quick reality check of how this may be affecting my health, that I started seeing gray hairs, which is slightly not terrifying, but lets me know that I have to have perspective, full transparency. I need to get back in contact with my therapist. I had to take a break for a while because I life and everything, but I do plan on reaching back out to her and reestablishing that relationship. So if you are listening, I will be reaching out soon. But yeah, man, just take the time, find the safe space to express what you are feeling. Allow those people, if it's someone else, to feel their feels and to process stuff as well. And yeah, just be human. I guess it's probably the best way I could say, or try to encourage those. And that's kind of where I'm trying to work towards with everything else that I have going on. Coach Santos, you have anything?
I am alive. I am blessed. I thought I was pregnant the other week because I cry every couple of hours. So yeah, that's where the culture scientist is currently at.
Say what?
Say what?
Say what?
Say what?
Say
what?
Say what?
Yes. No, we're not going to say anything else about it. No, we leave it exactly like that.
It's amazing what a girl, I'm an emotional person, So for me to question if I am pregnant, because that is how emotional I have been lately, is just very the tip of my iceberg.
Yes. So on that note, we're actually going to go ahead and switch lanes. We got a couple quick hitters for you guys for our I don't know what to call this. Just some quick hitters. It's been very interesting on these social media streets, outside of people having these NPC fetishes. I guess social media personality influencer by the name of Sukihana. She's blown up fame recently because they had a previous incident with a gentleman who shall not be named, but is a piece of shit. But that's a story for another day. But she apparently about a week ago started coming up in the news that she, well, in the social media news, that she says that she likes to pee on herself. And basically it's in response to an OnlyFans video that popped up on social media. Yes, Mr. Smith.
Yeah, just for the listeners, to save y'all the trouble, the video that was leaked was of her pleasuring herself, we'll say, with a rose toy. And I guess she was insinuating that the rose toy was going to make her squirt. But when you looked at the video, the liquid that came out looked a little murky. And so people immediately were just like, that's not squirt, that's pee. And the way the trajectory was, it was like, that's, you just pretty much peed on yourself. And was like, yeah, I'm confused. So just give the listeners a little background for that.
So it's one of those things, like, if we want to approach it from a anatomical or a biological standpoint, technically, how do I explain this? When a woman, I guess it's called, it's considered ejaculation, correct?
Yeah.
So when a woman ejaculates, yes, listeners, if you don't know, a woman can ejaculate. The fluid that she produces, depending on what her diet, as well as what she has consumed at that, during that time frame, can be...
men don't accomplish this goal that he is referring to.
She's not wrong. So if you don't know anything of what I'm talking about, I'm sorry to tell you, you ain't it, chief.
Those first couple, oh my gosh, they're so great. That's not the one.
Yeah, no. Literally, based on whatever you have consumed in your diet, can affect the percentage of... I forget the exact term, but the sexual fluid, for lack of a better term, versus how much urine is actually in it. So if you don't have a really strong, balanced diet, then it may change what it looks like. So it's kind of like, I really fucked up Arnold Palmer for all my Southern listeners.
Why would you compare it to an Arnold Palmer?
I'm sorry, that's just the first thing that came to my mind. I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm going to go stand in the corner and think about what I've done. But getting back to it all in all, it's like, one, first and foremost, this was an OnlyFans video. So for those who don't know or aren't in that part of the social media streets, a lot of people now have OnlyFans for a variety of reasons, whether it's sexual, trying to perpetrate, or just to connect with their fans on a different level. So it getting released, it's not shocking at all. But the headline was crazy enough. We were like, yeah, we got to talk about it.
I want an OnlyFans.
What do you mean by that?
Y'all think I'm kidding.
No.
I know you're not.
You have no idea where the financial struggle where I am in my brain that I literally was asking my coworkers, how can we do OnlyFans that's not sexual? And for everybody, I need you to understand, do not suggest to the culture scientist feet. Okay? That's nasty. I don't like feet. Just nasty.
So, needless to say, people are just on some different type of time nowadays. But speaking of that, for those who do not know, but basically, there is a social media personality by the name of Adam22. He hosts the No Jumper podcast along with a multitude of other things. He also has recently married his long-term girlfriend and adult actress, Lena the Plug. So, their whole thing was that they have the No Drama podcast and then they have the Plug podcast. One is for like the hip hop culture and social media, all that stuff. The other one is where they interview as a couple, adult film actresses. So from there, they, after they do the interview, they film OnlyFans content where they have usually threesomes, foursomes, but it's usually Adam, Lena, and whoever the guest is. So I say all that to say, to give you that context, because it was always this big thing on social media streets in that part where it was like a big thing where Adam's like, nah, I wouldn't want Lena to do a scene with other men. His preference, if it works for them, cool. But after they got married, they agreed for her to do a scene. Now, for those who are thinking, like, oh, they might ease their way into it, they might find somebody that they both feel comfortable with. Listeners, I need you to know, yeah, they just jump in on the big black deep end of the spectrum. She got together with, yes, Ms. Smith.
Pun intended, really?
Yes. A gentleman by the name of Jason Love, who is a BBC. I'm not going to explain what that is.
Yep, nope. We're going to move on.
But apparently this scene happened and it got social media in a tizzy because it was of what Adam 22 had said in the past. Then he decides to, Adam 22 decides to interview his wife on his podcast to discuss, say, I won't say controversy, but the situation. Here's what she said in response.
It wasn't hard to come back to your dick. I was in a lot of pain for a few days. Mm-hmm. So having sex was, you know.
It was reupholstered.
You're a little traumatized by me being like, ouch, hold on.
At first, yeah. But that did go away pretty quickly.
It took like 3 or 4 days, yeah.
Yeah. You feel like it snapped back? Well, you never had the natural birth that you were planning on.
I don't believe that a vagina stretches from having sex once for 40 minutes with a bigger dick.
So, listeners, if you didn't catch the details on that, basically they're insinuating that she had, as a woman's vagina may do, it may have adjusted, or there is some cultural sciences, can you help me out with this?
Snapback.
The snapback, yes. So the snapback may happen because that obviously she has sex with someone who is bigger than her husband. So people on the social media streets, they were going to him because they don't have any type of coup.
Hold on, she's a stripper? She's a porn star, I mean?
She's a porn star, yes.
Okay, I think I lost. I was like, I know she looked familiar, but I couldn't. Okay, so can I continue?
Yeah, so she's a adult star. She had she filmed OnlyFans content with another porn star named Jason Love, who is a African American male.
I got that. I just gotta make sure I missed that beginning part.
Yeah, so the main thing that they're just kind of discussing is like how do you kind of go back to that? Which, listeners, if you're not sure, obviously we're trying to slightly educate, but it's like there is in people's fetishes that there's like cuckold where a couple, one person in that couple likes seeing their significant other having sex with other people. It gives them some type of sexual arousal. Not my thing. I don't think it's a cultural scientist thing.
Like, where is it?
But I don't know about Ms. Smith. What Mr. Smith does for his and Teacher Bay's pleasure is none of our business. We're not going to talk about that. But it was really interesting. And probably one of the funniest things, and I'll open it up to everybody in just a second, but was they basically got the guy, Jason Love, to do an interview after the fact, where basically it was like a post-conference from the OnlyFans content. Mr. Smith, do we have that video? We don't? Okay. Needless to say, he just talked about it. It was like, yeah, he very much is seeing with it. Yeah, I was better. I was bigger. And of course, yes, you might have enjoyed it more because she has an emotional connection to Adam. But yeah, no, I'm better than him, for lack of a better term, or I might be paraphrasing.
I think this is stupid that it's even a conversation that they're sharing, just in my humble opinion.
I can see that. I think part of, go ahead, Mr. Smith.
Oh, no, I was agreeing. I mean, not everything that y'all do needs to be public business. Just putting that out there. Really didn't need to know this. If people want to get down with the fetishes or whatever, it is your life. It is your right as an adult to do whatever. It is legal. Make sure I say that clearly. Legal to do. But I didn't need to know this. If y'all want to do that in y'all household, I'm sure there's a lot of politicians and high-end people that's just like, oh, my wife wants to get banged out. All right, go ahead and do what you got to do. I don't care. But we don't need to know that part. But you're telling your husband that you wanted to do a scene with a black person with a bigger dick. And then you also tell him, oh, after the scene, I couldn't, you know, I felt in pain for 3 to 4 days. And your dick was pretty much eh. Like, I'm not going to say that for many guys or most guys or all guys. But for me, that would do something a little bit to my ego. Because I'm like, I don't know how to feel about, I have the emotional connection to you. But the, you know, I kind of feel like now I'm a little inadequate to what you have. Pretty much, I guess, enjoyed. So it's like a standard now has been set that I don't know if I'll ever be able to reach, which then will mess with me mentally, even though it, you know, they could have had a conversation and just gone away with it. Maybe that works for them. But for me, that would mess with me mentally to be like, well, I can never reach this level because, you know, what I have is what God gave me. So if I can't reach that level, it's not like I could be like, well, I'll just extend, I'll just add some extensions. No, what it is. If I can't reach it, now I'm gonna feel like I can never pleasure you, which then will mess with me mentally, psyche, all that. It's a big thing. But again, if it works for them, kudos. We just didn't need to know about it, in my humble opinion.
Like, no, like, just keep it off of social media. But I mean, it is what it is at this point. But getting back on topic, one other thing that I wanted to make sure that we do, like always, is play the music.
So this week, or this time, at the time of this recording, there were a couple things that actually happened. We're going to start off with the WNBA, where All-Star Weekend had just happened, and they had the skills challenge, the three-point contest, and then the actual All-Star game. So the skills challenge, the Las Vegas Aces, led by Kelsey Plum and Chelsea Gray, ended up winning the skills challenge against the New York Liberty, Sabrina Ionescu, and Courtney Vandersloot. I ain't gonna lie. I didn't think Kelsey Plum was that fast, but my gosh, she shot out of a cannon in that specific skills challenge. So kudos to the Las Vegas Aces. The story of the weekend, though, goes to the three-point contest in which New York Liberty's Sabrina Ionescu went nuclear, and I mean, listeners, nuclear in a three-point contest. She put up 37 out of a potential 40 points to win a WNBA three-point contest, including 20 straight three-point shots. To put in perspective, she missed 2 shots out of the entire thing. I'll give you a little bit of a quick math. There are 5 regular racks with 5 balls each. The end ball is the money ball, which counts for 2 points, whereas each regular ball counts for 1 point. There's a money rack, which is all money balls, so that's 2 points. And then there's what they call the starry shot, which is, I want to say that's like kind of NBA range, maybe a little bit past, and that's 3 points. When I tell you that, listeners, she literally missed 1 money ball and 1 regular ball. That's it. She hit both starries. She pretty much did not miss anything on her money rack. She went off to the point where everybody was like, so, hey, Steph Curry, aka the greatest shooter in the history of the NBA. Yeah. What's going on? And Steph even was like, yeah, now you've just given me something to be motivated for going into the next season. So I'm looking forward to the next All-Star weekend, in which I'm pretty sure Steph Curry is going to try to go for a perfect 40. But we'll see how that happens. Mm-hmm. Speaking of the NBA, the NBA Summer League completed with the Cleveland Cavaliers defeating the Houston Rockets to get the Summer League championship. I believe it's a guard, Isaiah Mobley, ended up getting Summer League Finals MVP. And one of the rising stars, Amani Bates, who I've actually been keeping up with since he was in high school, actually looked really good in the Summer League. So I'm looking forward to see what kind of rotation they put him in for Cleveland. Also was Summer League debuts for Chet Holmgren and Victor Wembanyama, who are like two of the most brightest stars, being that, what, Victor's 7'3", 7'3", or 3.5 inches, and Shaq's like 7'1", and they have handles like a guard. So I'm looking, it's going to be interesting. And if you don't remember, listeners, Shaq was the person that I think had a Les Frank injury on his foot trying to guard LeBron James. And I don't know why he did that, but whatever. but yeah, he's looking to, they're both going to be looking to make their rookie debut, even though Shaq technically is a year in, but because he got injured prior to Summer League, this will technically be his rookie year, almost similar to like Blake Griffin. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing how this season will go for both of the promising young stars. Finishing off with the NFL, and the two biggest stories out right now is, number one, the person that I always spoke about, wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins, decided to make a decision. And he will be taking his talents not to my Ravens, but to the Tennessee Titans. Which, I kind of disagree with that, because I don't really see everything that he wanted for his, I guess, his not his demands, but his requests. I don't see them making any noise in the playoffs. They may get out the AFC South. They may win the AFC South, but I can't even say they win the AFC South, because to be honest, Trevor Lawrence is better than, oh my God, I can't remember the quarterback's name. Sheesh. I'm looking right at his face. Ryan Tannehill. Willis? No, well, Willis is like trying to give Ryan Tannehill a run for his money, but I still don't see it yet. I mean, we'll see how training camp is, but
I still have... I remember now. They have that, the Tennessee has that white quarterback that likes to put mayonnaise in his coffee. I forgot. He's still trash for that.
Ooh, yeah. So they're gonna go back and forth, and that's gonna be a very interesting training camp. Looking forward to seeing who wins the starting job and who doesn't, and who ends up getting cut from the team, or who ends up being on practice squad. Because you never know, Malik Willis might end up being on practice squad, or the guy that spreads mayonnaise on this, never mind. So outside of that, the biggest thing right now is the running back market, in which Josh Jacobs, Saquon Barkley, and Tony Pollard, all running backs who were franchise tag. And for those listeners that don't know, franchise tag means that they haven't been signed to a long-term deal, but they're tagged in order to not be with any other team and to play for fair market value of what their position would be, which is about $10.1 million. Well, neither of those three did not sign their franchise tags, feeling like the organization that they play for do not value the running back position as they should. And I'm going to be honest, they're right, because listen, if you do not have, and shout out to Red Wolf, again, if you need all his information, it'll be in the description below. He's taught me a lot, but one of the biggest things is, if you don't have a running game, you don't have an offense, because then the defense can literally just guess pass the entire time and not have to worry about a running back. And if you don't have a star running back, i.e., let's say Minnesota Vikings, Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison. If you have Dalvin Cook, all right, you got to be a little bit worried. If you got Alexander Mattison, a little bit worried, but not really, right? So you have star running backs that do the legwork, that get, I mean, you're talking about, they get in the car crashes every week, every Sunday, because they are getting hit by linebackers that's 250, 260, defensive linemen that's like, damn near 300 pounds, like they're getting hit by everything. And for them to be making less than, even kickers. Now, the comparison has always been that there's kickers that make more annually or per year than running backs. And they use Justin Tucker. Now, for clarification, technically speaking, that's a bad example, because Justin Tucker is the best kicker in the history of the National Football League. No, I'm not saying this just because I'm a Ravens fan. I'm saying this because it is fact. Debate your mammy, okay? Debate your mammy. He is the best. I don't want to hear anybody else's, debate.
Adam Vinatieri would like to have a word.
Did Adam Vinatieri bust a 65-yarder?
How many game-winning field goals to win the Super Bowl does he have?
How many times did he get within pretty much a walk-off kickoff, a walk-off field goal? The man was in 20 yards each and every time, except for maybe what? The game against the Carolina Panthers? Or the Rams.
You had to do that. You never bring that up. Hey, I do not appreciate you. See, we was having a nice little back and forth. You just had to bring up old wounds. Yeah, no, I'm still not.
Don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. Adam Vinatieri is really good. I will give him that, right? Mm. But towards the end of his career, he did fall off very sharply. Almost similar to Janikowski for the Raiders, who technically had the previous record of 64-yard field goal or 65. Well, when you're talking about somebody who literally is an A-minus accurate kicker and the most accurate kicker since he's been in the league, you're talking, we're going on 11 years now, and this man, whereas most kickers, a lot of kickers can't even kick 30, 35, 40-yard field goals. Yes, I'm talking about you, Billy Cundiff. Yes, I'm talking about you, Dan Levitt. You're talking about people that in playoffs shanked a 25-yarder, which should be literally a layup. But yet, you're also talking about Justin Tucker, who drills 66-yarders, game winners, in opposing stadiums. And literally, I've seen him to the point where I think he actually can hit 70. If there was a fair catch and he could get a free run, I think he could hit 70 yards if he wanted to. But getting back to the point, to wrap it all up, you know, I agree with the running backs. Like, I really feel like they need to be paid adequately, because if you don't have a good running back, you don't have a good offense. Your wide receivers, you know, they can't get open because the defense are going to guess pass and they're going to throw double teams on your best receiver. So I honestly feel like I've said this once, I've said it 1,000 times, I'm going to end with this. If you are a quarterback in this league, yes, get your money. But you need to take the Tom Brady route and take a pay cut in order to make sure that you have legit weapons surrounded around you. If you have weapons, your job gets easier. If your job gets easier, you go to more playoffs and Super Bowls. If you go to more playoffs and Super Bowls, the chances of you pulling a Tom Brady going 7 wins and 10 tries gets higher. But that's neither here nor there. But if you have any other questions, comments, or concerns, or want to learn more about the NFL, hit up my boy Red Wolf on his YouTube and his Instagram. His links will be in the description below.
Plenty of the music. Holiday season. Thank you, Mr. Smith, for that awesome sports center. What would we do without you? Probably listen to Red Wolf, but we're going to do that anyway. We're actually going to go ahead and get into Now Mind You, which is a segment of the podcast where we talk about stuff that we found on the internet, we found interesting, and we use the Black vernacular of Now Mind You to give you a key or vital point of said story. So we want to first take some time to acknowledge the WGA SAG-AFTRA strike that are going on, where it's basically the equivalent of both writers and actors and actresses are basically on strike because of basically the big wigs and most of like the big companies like Netflix, HBO, or it's Max, I think it is, Fox, Sony, Warner Brothers, any big wig movie like company or production company, yeah, basically they're striking them because they're asking for a living wage. And before some people start saying, which some people have done on the internet, which was say, oh, well, they're getting paid millions of dollars. What are they striking for? Listeners, I need you to understand that the people that you're thinking of, or well, not you, but those type of people are thinking of, they make up maybe like 1% to 5% of all actors and actresses in the entertainment business in out that way. So when they're striking, they're not striking for themselves, because it's almost the equivalent of when a sports league goes on strike. You're trying to elevate the basement or the bottom level to help bring it to make it more equitable so they have a ability to eat and live. Yes.
You know how us as Black people get mad because nobody will sit there and boycott, I don't know, Target, or how the homosexuals should boycott Chick-fil-A, but people do not. It's the whole point of there's a dent in something, trying to create a dent in it.
So, yeah, so basically it's just them trying to make it right so that they'd be able to have a living wage. Now, this is a very interesting thing because I think this is the first time in almost like 20 or maybe even longer where both the Writers Guild and the Actors Association have been on strike at the same time, which is very unprecedented, which basically means that you're not getting new content for a lot of these different shows. Like, if you have a favorite show right now, if your actor or actress is on that show, they can't promote it. They can't be a part of it. They can't, you're not, if they're in the middle of production of a new season, that halts. If you have a show that's being worked on by writers, anybody that's part of that, the association, yeah, that's not happening. So basically, what their goal is to basically shut down Hollywood in a sense, because outside of needing a living wage, but also address the concerning issue of streaming content, where they are not getting nearly, if any, of the residuals from all the different streaming platforms streaming the shows that they were a part of. Whereas if it was on cable television, which isn't as prominent anymore, they would get residuals from that. But because it's on streaming and it's a different type of contract, they're not getting the money they're supposed to. Anyone else have thoughts? Go ahead, Mr. Smith.
So part of it is, as we said, is a top-down greed effect. There is a, I don't want to say survey, but just a post out there that says the highest paid Hollywood execs in the past 5 years, David Zaslav, part of the main culprit of this, with $498 million. Ari Emanuel, $346 million. Reed Hastings, $209 million. Bob Iger, $195 million. And Ted Sarandos, with $192 million. Meanwhile, the average screenwriter pay has dropped by 14% in those 5 years, right? So part of the issue is that they are so greedy that they will not be able to pass the compensation for a livable wage to those that are acting. And like Brother X said, if you want to look at, oh, well, you have, you know, Bruce Willis, or you have Tom Cruise, or let's say, who's a regular person that's in a show? Damson Idris, we'll say for Snowfall, right? Those main actors obviously can make a living wage because they are the star of the show. But you also have to remember that in those shows, everybody that they talk to in those shows are actors, whether background or just a recurring or, you know, whatever. Well, they don't get the type of compensation that the main actors get. So part of the issue was that, you know, they want to make a livable wage for all performers, as well as make sure that the background artists or actors and actresses get to pay a livable wage as well. Obviously not as big as those that are recurring, but, you know, to be self-sustainable in this world. And one of the things that really struck a nerve in a lot of people is that the execs were like, yeah, instead of us paying the background performer, we're just going to scan them and then pay them for a half a day's labor and then use their individual likeness for the foreseeable future. Like, literally, I'm going to pay you one time, but I have the authority to use your image, likeness to whatever I want to do for how forever without their consent. That is insane, right? But then, you know, so obviously within the strike, part of the other issue is that where everybody's like, you know what? If you don't have writers and you don't have actors, you don't have a show. So we're going to strike and see how long it takes for you guys to feel it. What the execs countered with is they were like, well, we're just going to disappear the show from the streaming service. So you will see shows leaving, we call it Max now, and Netflix and other things. And so that way they don't have to pay performers residuals. So it's pretty much like a game of chicken to me, which is effed up, because you're talking, and listeners, I'm gonna break it down real simple for you. That means you ain't getting no new Abbott anytime soon. That means you ain't getting no Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. That means, you know, pretty much your shows until this is done is reality shows. That's pretty much all we got.
And even those, some of them are written.
Yeah. So it's like, it sucks. And shout out to Gabby, me and Brother X's mutual friend, for giving us some of the information. She's obviously on the front lines picketing, you know, as we speak. But it's just some of the stuff that was broken out. And I mean, you can actually Google this stuff as far as like the contract negotiations, but it's some effed up shit. But the last thing I'll say to that is the exec's answer to all this is, well, if you guys are going to strike, then we're just going to withhold everything and see how good you are in September, which means you can lose your homes, or lose your rent, or lose everything. It's like, you guys are that greedy that you are willing to have people go on the street because you don't want to pay them a livable wage. That's how we are in America. The ghetto. That is all.
Pretty much, man. So from one ghetto to another, or ghetto type-ish, apparently the Culture Scientist and I's favorite shopping website for the Lolo, Shein, is getting hit with the RICO.
We might just get hit with the RICO.
Mr. Smith, can you go ahead and play the clip?
Chinese fast fashion firm Shein is facing new legal challenges to his business practices.
Yeah, three designers filed a civil lawsuit in California accusing the company of repeatedly stealing designs from other artists. The lawsuit alleges that Shein creates as many as 6,000 new items per day, all based on stolen designs, through a coordinated illegal operation. That's the lawsuit's language. The suit also claims that the practices violate the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, better known as RICO, a law enacted in the 1970s to help law enforcement prosecute organized crime.
Well, that's all good and all, but Culture Scientist, what did you say when you first heard this? Heard about this?
I'm still buying my stuff for my bachelorette party.
Oh, yeah. I about to say, I definitely bought some stuff for the groomsmen.
I need all my white stuff. I'm sorry.
I feel bad,
but it's the same thing like I said before. I choose my battles, and this is not one of my battles I choose to fight. I'm sorry.
Hey, that's real.
Same thing. I still shop at Target.
Hey, whatever. Listeners, you got to understand. Forgive us. I know we're supposed to be righteous black people and do the right thing and all those things. Spike Lee would be normally proud of us, but dog, we gotta get what we gotta get, and we gotta get it at the most affordable price. Like, listeners, you gotta understand, when you gotta make these decisions and you gotta figure out what you do when your son's at home crying on the floor on the bed. All right, I'm sorry, that was a little much, but you guys get the point. All the same, yeah, it's just crazy because it was not one of the things I had on my bingo card for 2023. But Mr. Smith, you have any thoughts about Shein?
I'm actually like flabbergasted that they make 6,000 new items per day. So oh. I know they steal this shit. Like,
oh
no way.
That's why I wasn't shocked by the guy when they said it was a RICO case. I said, oh yeah, that makes sense.
Dog, they are dog. It is criminal. Like,
it makes me wonder about all the other sites too. All of these things. Come on, let's be real.
Like, there's no originality. Like, you, like the trademarks for everything. Like, dog, you understand? I have seen three different styles of Jordans on Shein, everything exactly the same except for the emblem on it. Probably made from the same place. And probably the rejects that got off the back of the truck. Shit is crazy.
That shit is true. But I mean, I'm like, y'all, I understand why it needs to get a RICO, which I agree with. But this ain't a battle that I'm gonna fight because, you know, it's inflation and I don't care what anybody say, we in a recession. I don't care what nobody say, because these gas prices tell me we in a recession. And I need just something for the low low. So if you telling me that I will support my black businesses, even though they sometimes upcharge, but it's because they're a small business that has to take all of the labor and man work and all of that. But it at the same time, a brother needs to make sure he had cut corners sometimes. So if I can get the same thing for 90% off, I mean, come on now. You know what I'm saying? You gotta do what you gotta do. But
listeners, if you see us walking around with a big Shein bag, don't ask no questions.
If you want to know what I'm wearing on my bachelorette trip, it's Shein.
You gotta understand. She is literally sponsored. Like, Shein, we are always taking donations.
Money, 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 money. Give me money. Give me, give me, give me money. Give me all the money. I need money. Give me money. Give me, give me, give me money.
Hey, 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 hey. Yes, we're gonna turn that into a song over our break. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, no, that's just crazy. And then I think our last story. Is it our last story? Yeah, our last story. Listeners, I don't know about you, but every once in a while, I enjoy a good Japanese steakhouse. But this next one, yeah, I'm good. So, you know, we can't go an episode without talking about Florida. So, This story reads, Florida Japanese steakhouse closes doors as customers test positive for meth.
Hey, yo, what the fuck?
Let's read more.
I don't understand how you test positive.
I'm glad that you asked that, culture scientist. A Florida Japanese steakhouse is closing its doors permanently after customers tested positive for meth after eating there. According to US Today, Nikko Japanese Steakhouse in Pace, Florida, has since been shut down following the incidents. On June 9th, several customers who dined at a Florida restaurant, Hibachi Table, reported that they were feeling sick afterwards. Subsequent testing found that 3 out of the 7 affected individuals found to have tested positive for methamphetamine. Police initiated an investigation into the alleged poisoning, but had to close the case without making any arrest due to insufficient evidence. The steakhouse announced its closure on Facebook following the incident. After more than 10 years of serving the Pace community, we have decided to close the steakhouse, the restaurant wrote. It was determined by the Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Department that there was nothing linking the restaurant to accusations, and after a clear survey by the health department, we reopened our doors. We are so thankful for our regulars, yada, yada, yada. Thank you for your support. Unfortunately, it just wasn't enough to keep the doors open. Culture scientists. Yes.
Americans.
Yes.
I need you to use your brain just a little bit.
Uh-huh.
Because the part that I just could not, even when I heard this, I was like, but how? How sway? And only 3 people? Not the entire party?
You're asking good questions.
And then for y'all to harass people. Before we start harassing people, okay, in companies, in people's livelihoods here, okay? I mean, people's livelihoods.
Yes.
Can we take a moment and use our brains? Because that restaurant did not need to completely shut down its livelihood and other people that it served because some dum-dums probably did meth ahead of time and forgot that they did meth. Or perhaps somebody poisoned them in their own friend group. I don't know. But you can't, I don't understand until they can explain how you can put meth and a person can't tell.
I don't know, man. Mr. Smith, do you have any thoughts? Because there's something I do want to get to.
Yeah, I agree everything with what the culture scientist said. And I'm sorry, I'm probably going to take your joke because
go ahead. Take it.
The fact that the person underneath of this said this is a big meth steak, probably top tier.
Top tier. Wait, there's more.
But then the one that says stop messing around, fam. You got it. That is hilarious. Whoever had these puns written down, I need y'all to stand up and give yourself a standing ovation because that was just beautiful. That was beautifully done.
And these are reasons why I love the internet. That's like when the whole submarine was happening. The jokes, I mean, it was a very sad, but the jokes was boom, 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 boom. I was like, yo.
No, there ain't no such thing as coothing on the internet. Ain't nothing.
Especially when you're talking about Black Twitter. But I'm sorry to Coach Asai's request, and I'll leave off with this. It has to go back to the submarine story. Whoever did Trapped in the Closet with the submarine, talk about, and now I'm stuck in the submarine, and I don't know what to do. This oxygen is going down, and I'm looking at this like, boo-hoo. Fam, I cracked the hell up for like a solid 5 minutes. So, Black Twitter, I love y'all. Keep doing y'all thing.
We just have to find the joy in the darkness. I think that is what us as Black people were taught. So that is why sometimes it comes off as if we don't care, but we care deeply. Before we move on, this is not on the schedule. It just happens to be that I was roaming on our IG, and I'm just gonna say it real quick. This poor young man proposed at some basketball game, and the girl said no, quick, fast, and in a hurry, and then put the sunglasses on and sat back down at the game.
Oh no! Oh, I'm done. Like. I'm about to say, oh, if I drove, she better figure out.
After he got everybody's attention.
Oh, yeah, no.
He was like, hey, see? Everybody, look. And then he got down and said, will you marry me?
No, see, I'm out the window. Like,
and then some man in front of her looked back like, oh, shit, and then turned back around.
Mrs. Smith, I know this is a tangent. We're going to get to the topic in just a moment, but. You and I know, and I think we talked about this in one of our Black Box episodes. You remember my first trip out of the country, mm-hmm. where we went to Costa Rica. We met that dude who was getting ready to propose to his girl. And we mm-hmm. go to the mansion party next to last night. Mm-hmm. He in a suit. We all in our togas having a good time. He gets ready. Everybody cuts music. He gets down and to propose. And I kid you not. He asked me, will you marry me? Da-da-da. Like, his name was on spill. We married. She said, yes. We're like, oh! And listeners, if you haven't listened to the episode, spoiler alert, she says, yes, for the second time.
Oh, shit.
I'm sick. Because you didn't have to say that. You got to put our business out like that. Like I'm just trying to have this moment. We looking at this mansion. Like, you got Rick Ross in the background eating pears and everything. Like, Drake singing music, everything. It's like it's a wonderful time. But you going to say that in front of all these people I barely know? Yes, Mr. Smith.
I'm sorry. I'm thinking of that half, you know, because listeners, I ain't gonna lie, that joint was a bad shit. That, but to the shout out to Social Escapade, y'all keep doing y'all thing. But to the fact that the lady that she said it for the second time, listen, I want y'all to understand. All you heard was yes, hey, for the second time. Oh, yeah, like it was so fast. And the next thing you hear is everybody like, hey, like she said yes anyway. But and then afterwards, when they took their little engagement pictures, we're all just kind of standing around like, so no one's gonna talk about the fact she said for the second time. Nope. Follow up questions. What happened the first time? Was there another woman? Is she on this trip? There were so many questions. And then somebody said, take this rum and shut up. We said, okay.
Yeah, we it was just a lot going on. But yes, that is one that there is a reason why I did not do a big public proposal to the cultural scientist. That was one of my biggest fears, because if you tell me no, one, I'm gonna be honest, that's probably the end of the relationship 8 out of 10 times. Because you would have hopefully already had these conversations about where this relationship is going. And if you are confident enough to spend the money and to go out your way in a public forum to do that, I don't know if you... It is very hard to bounce back from that, at least in my eyes. But we're actually going to take a moment, play the We'll Be Right Back music. All right, so we're back now. We're actually going to go ahead and get into this week's topic. I know it's been a minute. We gave you part one of our deep conversations. But we're actually going to take some time and actually give you part two. So we're going to take some new questions, and we're just going to kind of popcorn it around. So I'll read a question, Mr. Smith will read a question, Coach of Sciences will read a question, and we'll just kind of give our answers and give our feedback. And you can go into a little bit of detail, but we do have about 6-ish questions that we're going to try to get through, and we'll just kind of tango our way through it. So I'll start with the first one. So the first question I think is a really dope one that we found was, what is something you love to experience for the first time again? I'll go first. So, listeners, if you don't know, the Culture Scientists and I enjoy going to concerts and obviously Dreamville Fest, so we like to go to festivals. I kid you not, as much as I love Dreamville Fest, there was a concert that the Culture Scientists and I and Mr. Smith and a few other friends went to that still, the vibes from it just hit different. It was back 2017, 2018, somewhere in that ballpark, it was back when Kendrick Lamar was fresh off of, was it the Black Panther soundtrack? Yes, off his award-winning album, Damn. And he was on the championship tour, and he came to Raleigh, and it was the amphitheater. I forget the name of the actual park. But it was, when I tell you, listeners, the music, the vibes, like how we're feeling, we're just out there. And then I know it's cliche, but he told everybody to put their flashlights or put their phones up, and they cut all the lights off on the stage. It was such an amazing feeling, because it was probably the first really big concert I had went to in North Carolina. Like, I've been to other ones, like in college and all that other stuff, but it was just something like that. The only thing I ever felt similar to that was probably the first Dreamville Fest when I first heard J. Cole set. I won't say life changes because I feel like that's cliche, but yeah, man, that'll probably be the one. Coach Scientist, do you have one or do you need more time?
No, I was going to say, I think So when you say that you would love to experience a gay for the first time, this is just a general...
In general. It can be anything.
So I agree. I would wish I could experience, I think, J. Cole's first Dreamville again.
Yeah.
Because that moment that he stood up and he asked to turn on all the lights so he could see the crowd of people. Yes, the crowd that was this year of 2023 was amazing.
Yeah.
However, that first crowd has nothing on the on all the after, because it was the first one. It was like he finally did it, his dream came true, and blah, blah, blah. And it was really cool to see in person and witness it and be there. So, you know. And then I think for me, if I could experience it again for the first time, I think I would like to experience Africa again, go back when I was 17 with the knowledge that I, a little bit more knowledge that I have now and understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I was truly an innocent teenager when I went. And I think being an Americanized teenager truly showed me, and going there bursted my bubble.
Mm. To piggyback off your point, I think for the J. Cole and Dreamville Fest the first time, listeners, if you didn't know, and I don't know if we've talked about it fully on the podcast, and if we have, oh, well, you're listening anyway. That first Dreamville Fest was almost 2 years in the making, I want to say. Well, at least 1 year in the making, where it got delayed. It was originally supposed to be the week of my birthday. Shout out to the Coach Scientist for getting me tickets. I love her to death for that. But it ended up getting postponed due to a tropical storm that came through the area, which I was pissed, I was upset, but I got over it. And then we got to experience it. And shout out to my frat brother who did the party bus. Dog, it was so crazy because I know all these big cities got these like festivals going on, Broccoli City, Something in the Water, like all these different festivals. But for the little town that could, which is Raleigh, like Raleigh is not, it's a big city, but it's not a big, big city. For them to be able to put that on and for them to be able to fill it out to capacity and do numbers and continue to do numbers, it was so crazy. It really put North Carolina back on the map in a sense when it came to like the music scene. Because if you know, you had Drake and so many other artists that are coming to North Carolina perform and wanting to be a part of it. And just the vibes, man. But we've spoken up. Miss Smith, what about you?
For me, I actually would like to experience Hampton's pre-college again. At the time that I did it, I was 17, obviously, because I was getting ready to be a freshman. But it's the summer. For those that don't know, Hampton has a summer program called pre-college where you can earn college credit before you become a freshman. But you also kind of get the lay of the land with less people, and you kind of have a concentrated class, but you also kind of get kind of like a pre-draft before you actually go to college. But the parties and the things, like the knowledge that I know now, to go back and experience that for the first time would be amazing. One, because I would have the energy of a freaking 18-year-old, so I'd be able to dance and do everything I want to do. Two, because back then, if I could do it where it doesn't, you know, the technology was flip phones or what's it called? T-Mobile Sidekicks. Bam. Shit was fire. Mm-hmm. You literally were just in the moment. Nobody wanted to dress. I mean, people were just literally jeans and a t-shirt and some sneakers. And the point was, could you dance with everybody before it was time for curfew? Like, to enjoy that again, because that was also like my first real experience of freedom. Outside of like, you know, not having to worry about, okay, I got to be back to the parents or whatever. So like being able to experience that again and have that joy of being like, I'm on my own. I get to dance with this person and then go to class and then like have these new experiences for the first time. Mind blowing. Definitely mind blowing.
To that point, I want to go back to freshman year at Shaw University when the good old Mr. Newsom. No, I mean, this is bad. We're stealing money, but we had a great old time freshman year. Okay. shout out. I want to read, like, I feel like it's a blur. Like, did that happen? Did it not happen? There was this party by the books by down in the, by the walkway when you're getting ready to walk to the upperclassmen dorms next to the student union. It was like out, it was right on the thing. When I say I remember that party, but I feel like it was a dream, I want to experience that again.
Dog, someone said on social media today, and I wish I remember what their bio, their tagline was, but they said, yo, shout out to millennials, because they were pulling dudes and women in business casual clothes. Yeah. And I was like, yo, what were we thinking? We had a vest, button-up tie, untucked shirt, denim jeans, and a pair of polo loafers tearing up everybody random house, putting denim jeans things on the wall.
Oof.
Crazy numbers.
Like, good times.
Oh,
and I still remember the tagline. Come to the grown and sexy party. Ladies be sexy, fellas be grown. Ladies free before 10, fellas $10 before 10.
Dog. Getting in the most untrustworthy niggas' cars to get shuttled to a party. True. In an apartment. That, nigga, true. I could have walked. True. And I'd have paid $5 for to get in there.
We used to walk, so we were, everything for us was walking distance. So like, Club Adeline, bruh. There's a picture that is deleted that my brothers found of me. One day they were on my Facebook and I was near them. And it was a picture of me in the air. Yeah. And my brother said, what is this? And I said, I don't know. Delete.
Okay.
And they were like, what are you doing in North Carolina? I said, it was at a party. I don't know. I said, that made me look like me. I don't know what you're talking about.
See, Mrs. Smith, you know our rule. No face, no case. That's why we had the fitted caps on. You never know who I was.
The fact that you can tell at what point you started caring if people knew what you was up to.
Oh, yeah.
Because you notice the drinks and the pictures start to disappear.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it was
so, like,
oh, was freshman year, nasty freshman work.
Didn't matter.
Nasty
sophomore
work.
Year, it was like,
no.
Oh, up high.
All headshots.
Yep. It was like, girl, we about to take a picture. Cup down immediately.
No, craziness. Oh, man. All right, Mr. Smith, you want to take the next one?
Sure. So the next question is, do you believe men and women can be strictly platonic friends? I'll take the first one. Yes. Mainly because even though the gimmick is always a man that is platonic friends with a woman, 9 times out of 10 wants to sleep with them, I can attest to you that that's definitely not the case, because there are plenty of people that I'm platonic friends with. I'm like, I have no interest in sleeping with you. So yeah, we cool though. We cool. We can play pool. We can shoot the ones in the basketball. Do like game nights or whatever, play games, but after that, you got to go. But I call you, we can go to brunch, but that's about it.
Oh yeah, no, I think the answer is yes as well. I believe that it's one of those things where it's like, listeners, we have plenty of both ways for myself, Coach Scientist, and I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't allow yourself to build those bonds. Because then you are able to have a better scope of who people are, and you're not putting people in the box of, oh, they're just this sexual thing where I'm supposed to have a sexual or romantic type of connection to, because there's different types of love. There's platonic love, there's romantic love, there's family love, there's all these different things. So to narrow in your world to that amount, that seems to be crazy to me. And for those who are just using those relationships to try to buy your time, I don't know what to tell you. Just read it by situation basis, because you could very easily just be doing yourself a disservice. But you also see some people who played the cards right and now they're in a happy, committed relationship. So, I mean, to each their own, but know your situation.
My best friend from childhood is a man. So, and everybody and their mama thought we were dating throughout high school. And it was not even, there was no interest. Like, I love him, but on a very different level. Very. And it's just so weird that people can't seem to be able to have, you know, platonic friendships.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very real, man.
Now, do I believe that a person can be friends with a person that they have been in a relationship with? Yes, I do believe so. There just has to be an understanding across the board, and that in general, who the person is that, like, for example, just like know like what is okay, what's not okay, and expectations.
Yeah, setting healthy boundaries.
And even if like you have your vision, it doesn't matter. The person, you have to trust yourself and everything, and that's how I feel about that.
Yeah, and I think it really just like, hey, my biggest thing, I always have a rule of thumb, is like, just don't have me out here looking crazy. And if you would feel embarrassed or you feel like you would have to hesitate to tell me you're seeing X, Y, and Z person, yeah, you need to go ahead and let me and yourself go from the situation, because it ain't worth it. Honestly. Coach Science, you just want to take that third question?
Do you think that everyone deserves a second chance? I want to say my immediate answer is yes.
Okay.
Because I feel like in this world, it's a long life. I mean, it's a long and short life.
Yeah.
I think after the second chance, then, you know, and it depends on what the person did. I feel like that's a one of those types of, depending on what it is, is how forgiving or how can you give a second chance? And then again, setting boundaries. Okay, I'm going to give you the second chance. And after the second chance, if you screw up this time, whatever level of what we were, that's what, you know, I'm not doing that again. I do, I mean, I think I unfortunately probably give people, most people, up to three chances until they piss me off. And then I'm like, oh, I'm good, no more. Thanks. But yeah, it took me a while to get to that point. So
I can feel you on what you're saying. I think for me, I believe so, but I also subscribe to the broken mirror or broken mug theory or way of thinking, where it's like, yes, it can be put back together, but whatever it originally was will never be the same. Now, that doesn't mean that it can't be as strong
or better,
but it's never going to be exactly like, I'm a very trusting person. And once I give you my trust, or I believe in you, or you like, I got your back and I care about you, it is up to you and only you to determine whether or not that changes. Because if your actions and your behaviors make me question whether or not I should trust you or to vibe with you or give you my trust, then that's a problem. So understanding that, I think, is having a second chance, but understanding that you have to operate differently. You don't get the same level of grace that you would previously, whether it's platonic, romantic, or even family, because a big part of it can be family as well, where it's like you have a falling out with a family member, and if certain boundaries are being pushed, then you're like, hey, I'm love you, but I'm gonna love you from a distance. We can maybe hopefully in the future have built that relationship again in some form or fashion, but not right now. Not if certain things aren't gonna be in place. Got any thoughts, Mr. Smith?
I agree. Depends on the person and circumstances. There are many circumstances in which it's like, okay, this mess up, like depending on the age or, you know, anything. It's like, all right, you young, you didn't know, whatever. But there are certain things that's like unforgivable. To this day, I only have literally one person on my shit list that I will never forgive. And it wasn't so much of what he did. It was more so of how he went about doing it. Brother X, you know exactly who I'm talking about. We ain't got to say no names, but you know who I'm talking about. And Queasy knows who I'm talking about too. I know you listen to Queasy. You know exactly what I'm talking about. But but you know, again, it's if it's something that's just like it happened and, you know, we could talk about it. And maybe, like you said, as Culture Scientist said, it's a long life. There's ways to get over things. That's true. But if there's something that has been like processed over time, like you legitimately thought about this, you processed it, you went through all the trials and tribulations and went over time, which means you were intentional about this, there are certain things I cannot forgive, because I feel like no matter what, I'm always going to have that thought that you're always going to be that person. Even if you change because of the process of what you've done, it's always going to feel like that. But for the most cases, I feel like a lot of people can deserve a second chance, except for that one nigga. But we ain't going to go there.
Yeah. But before we go into the next question, I do have a quick question. What are you guys' thoughts about when you have someone who is important to you and they have, and you have like a certain connection with them, how do you feel about them giving other people second chances when you've had the opportunity to watch from the outside looking in and see what that person did to the person that you care about? How do you kind of, I guess for me, I compartmentalize it, but how do you kind of, how do you sort those feelings in that situation?
Either one first. Okay. So for me, especially like how I think now, I take my dad's famous phrase that he has told me since I was 7 years old. You can take a horse to the water, but you can't make him drink it. I can tell you to the blue in the face that this person's doing bad, this person's effing up or whatever. But until you as a person are ready to do the work yourself, I got nothing. And yes, it'll hurt me to be like, all right, well, I'm seeing this and you're giving this person a second chance, even though they don't deserve it. But at the same time, I always tell myself, this is your life. This is your decision. You can do that. However, if you decide to continue to do that, I don't want to hear you complaining. I don't want to hear you doing others. I don't understand. Yes, you do. You just don't want to make that ugly decision that's going to hurt, but it's going to help you in the long run. And I feel as though when people get to that point in life, it makes things a lot easier to compartmentalize, where like there are people that I literally had messaged that are like, I'm talking like they had a shit show of things going on in their life. And I'm sitting there thinking, the simple answer is this. But I can tell you that. But again, it's easy for me to say that because I'm not going through the shit that you're going through. So I can't say, oh, well, you should just do this because maybe you have an emotional connection to the pain or to the stuff that you're trying to fix. And I will never feel that. So I have to understand that. Shout out to my therapist for telling me that. I have to understand that and be like, okay, when you are ready to do that, then I will be here. But until then, I don't want to hear about it if you're going to make these decisions. Because I done told you. I done told you a second time. I done told you a third time. You don't want to hear it? Cool. But I also don't want to hear you complain about it because you have made a conscious decision to keep going through the fuck shit.
You said it sounded like what my therapist had said. It was more like it, but not in reference to like that, but I think it was a reference. It was probably a conversation about my mom, or like I'm expecting a certain thing to happen each and every time, and then maybe I'm setting myself up for failure because I'm expecting the conversation to go a certain way. So it's the same, like, to me in a way. What you said is also like, okay, you forgave this person. I'm going to expect you to still complain about this person, but I also don't want to hear about it. Like, I'm telling you this up front. Like,
you choose to forgive them, yeah.
Because I have a love-hate relationship with the saying, you like it, I love it. Because I feel like when we say it, people say it to be funny, but I honestly think it's the same concept as we can agree to disagree. It's not to be rude. It's just to say we see it differently. But I'm in complete agreement with Mr. Smith. We need to, I think communication is probably the most important part. So if you are gonna, if somebody you know is gonna forgive something and then come back, you, I think as a person for your friendship, needs to communicate with that friend just to say, hey, or whoever it is, hey, like, we're cool, but I'm not cool with so-and-so. Or this is what I feel. There have been multiple times where I have said my piece, and I said my piece because I love that particular person. And I don't expect them to change what they're going to do, but I wanted to bring it to their attention, A, for multiple reasons, so that later down the road, they're not like, oh my gosh, how come you didn't tell me this? Because, you know, people do that. And then B, you know, why weren't you there? Well, I already told you my opinion up front. This is where we're at. I'm here for you when you need me. But until then, you know, and that's kind of so same to what Mr. Smith was saying.
That's real. That's real. All right, let's go ahead and move to the next one. The next question is, would you rather have the power of time travel or the power to see the future? And in addition to that, if you could get a chance to go back in time and change your decision that you made, what would you have done? Coach of Scientist, go ahead.
So question.
Yes.
To the first part.
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, it's a question and a statement. So I feel like I'd rather have the power of time travel because then I can travel to the future. That you, that's okay. Not, the question is open ended.
Before I let me clarify. So the intent, at least in my mind, Mr. Smith, you could correct me wrong if you saw it differently, was that if you're doing the ability to time travel, that allows you to go to the past and observe what happened in the past or participate in the past. Whereas seeing the future, you're only able to go to see future events.
I agree, but as the scientist in me,
okay,
I feel that all time travel should be able to go forward and back. I think it is stupid that you cannot do both. That is just my opinion on it. So if you want me to focus on one or the other, I always try to find a loophole in most questions. So I found my loophole. So what would you like me to answer? How
about you answer the second question then?
Okay, well, I answered the first part of the question. Yes, anyways, I want the time travel so I can travel back and forth to the future and the past. If I travel to the past, so like I'm in this, I don't know if I would to change anything. I would like to give myself advice.
Okay.
And I don't know if that would change anything.
I mean, having advice could change things, yeah.
Right. But I fall into that category of, yes, if I could change, okay. So right now where I am mentally struggling with is just life and like decisions that I made about schooling and things. If I may, like maybe would have made a decision to maybe change my mind about how I would have went about getting my doctorate, or I would have done that. But then those are things that make me say, I would not have met Brother X, or I would not have had the positives in my life. So I don't like saying that I want to go back and change anything. And I also don't really like saying that I regretted anything. I prefer to say that I would give myself some advice. So if anything, I would give myself more advice about my career and tell myself not to be as hard on myself. And it's okay that it's not what you think. And there are a million ways to accomplish your goals. And you can, you know, just communicate a little bit more and stuff like that. That's, I think, the advice I would give. I don't think I would change anything. I feel like everything that has happened in my life happened for a reason.
Even
up into my super annoying emotional state that I am currently in.
Mr. Smith, what about you?
So I would rather have the power of time travel, mainly just because, one, there is a part of me mentally that has been for quite a while, I want to say at least for the last couple of years, that is always kind of, when I'm stressed or I need to just like mellow out, I kind of just reminisce about simpler times, i.e. sitting in my room when I was 10, 11 years old, playing Super Nintendo or Sega Genesis or PlayStation without a care in the world. Like literally just the only thing was, the only care I had at that time was, can I rent this game from Blockbuster and can I beat it in a week in order to turn it back in? That was my biggest thing, that and test for school, right? So, I mean, I would love to have the power of time travel just to kind of feel those feels again, get those types of endorphins. And then also, if I can get a chance to go back in time and change my decision that I made, I'm similar to the culture scientist in which I wouldn't like to change many decisions because it pretty much made me who I am. I think I would only change maybe one or two. And I brought this up on the podcast before. One would be my junior year. I would have taken that girl to prom because I feel like my senior year probably would have been a little bit better in the sense of like cultivating a friendship with two people, which could have maybe resulted in a relationship that I doubt would have made it through the freshman year of college. So nothing like that would have changed. But then also the second decision is I would have told myself to be more confident in college. My first, I'll say 2 years of college, I was very shy, couldn't take rejection, didn't know how to talk to people the way I do now. So it's like a lot of the stories that I have would have been enhanced better if I would have had more confidence. And I feel as though if I could give myself advice, be like, you know what? The worst thing they could tell you is no. Go through with it. If you get the rejection, you get the rejection. But at least you can say, hey, I did this versus you kind of playing the background the way you did freshman year. Not saying that, I mean, hell, I'm writing a book in which I have four big stories minimum on there that people are going to read and be like, whoa, that happened. But I feel like it could have been more had I been more confident. So I would definitely probably make that decision to tell my 17/18-year-old self, hey, you got it. You're confident. Don't subscribe to the notion like, oh, no girls checking for me. Oh, I'm a weirdo. Oh, this, that, the third. Like, just be yourself. Don't try to overextend it. And trust me, you don't know it, but people are looking at you. They have the same fear as you. They don't want to be rejected either.
That's real. This is why I could be a little bit different. I think I might actually say the power to see the future. As life has changed and what I value has kind of altered some, being able to see the future allowed, I think it would give me a sense of joy or a sense of peace of mind, because cultural science will tell you my brain thinks and plans out different scenarios in so many different ways. I anticipate worst case scenarios. If I'm able to see the future, it also gives me a slightly peace of mind. So I don't, it allows my brain to not think as much. Granted, I know things can change based on my actions, and I would hopefully not screw it up if it is a future worth seeing. But yeah, I think that would be what I would choose. And then if I were to go back and change anything, only thing I would maybe change is work-wise, not hesitating so much, taking time to spend with family and friends, taking that time off, going on those vacations, recognizing that the school will be here, recognizing that, hey, even if something goes on while you're gone, it's not your responsibility. It's not your fault. If something happens, you take care of your business, you take care of your mental health, and not beat yourself up that, hey, I think I may need a mental health day because I know I'm not, excuse me, mentally right, and living in that truth. Okay? Let's see. Let's try to get one more, just because I know we're going a little tight on time. Coach Science, did you pick? You got two questions to pick from.
I had to read it. You want me to read it out loud? I'm sorry.
Sure, yes.
What is the one thing that makes you not want to give up even when you are at your lowest?
Well, there's multiple things. First, there's everyone from once I was a child to now that has invested time, energy, and mentoring and guidance and wisdom into me. That motivates me to not give up, even when I don't know how the shit's gonna happen. My father, and the quote that shout out to Peanut, our friend Peanut, remind me of a quote from Black Panther where it's like, a father has not done his job if he has not prepared his son to deal with his life without him. And I believe that all the lessons and everything that my father chose to do to raise me and prepare me to be able to handle and lead and do the things that he believed I needed to be able to be a member of society, I believe that motivates me. Honestly, the most important thing is probably the cultural scientists. I honestly think that before the culture sciences, Mr. Smith, you know this, I was ready to give up on romantic relationships altogether. I had gotten to a space where I was at peace with myself, but I was ready to give up that part of who I was. And even now, even to this day, even with all the wedding stuff, she is a big motivator, the main motivator of why I don't give up when I get stressed about things. because the love of who I know she is and what she has done for me and how she has grown me as a person and helped develop me as a person and fed into me and helped build what we've grown together over these past 6 years now. I can't waste all that effort just because it's a down moment. I got to ride the roller coaster until the end. And even though I don't know if Coach Scientist will be able to get on the ride because, you know, she's a little bit short, but I think that I'm willing to ride that roller coaster and see where it ends. What about you, Ms. Smith?
It's a couple things. One, the quote that I look at all the time is, I am my ancestors' wildest dreams. I think of folks that were adults in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and before that didn't have many of the opportunities we have now, that fought with less privileges and were able to make, you know, things happen. And don't get me wrong, I mean, there obviously was different circumstances back then. Things were cheaper. Things, salaries were kind of a bit more manageable. But, you know, with all the obstacles that they dealt with, especially folks that look like me, I think if they can deal with that and do boycotts and still get an honest wage and still be able to do things, why can't I do this thing that they fought for? Why can't I continue to work even when I don't want to? Or why can't I, you know, wake up and be productive even when I don't want to? And then the other thing, some of the other things is my family. I do feel like sometimes, you know, that my family poured a lot into me, kind of like we're going to propel you to this level. We're all going to put our hand on this plate to push you to the next level. And then we want to see you grow from there. And I've always had this adage, which me and my therapist have talked about, that I feel like I'll be letting people down if I just drop from there. Like, I've told people, oh, I wanted to be a video game designer when I was younger, and then ended up, I knew I just wanted to do computers. And fast forward to being, you know, working as a government contractor, you know, like I always think about my parents and my grandparents and aunts and uncles that contributed in some way to get me to this point. And it's like, I can't let down your investment because you didn't have to do that. You chose to do that out of love. So out of love, I need to make sure that I am proving to you that your investment was well worth it. Even though they can say 70,000 times, it's okay, don't worry about it. Like, you doing exactly what you need to do, but it's just, I feel like that because of what they invested in me, especially when you have families that don't give a damn. Like, they could just be like, all right, you going to college, whatever. Or, you know, get the guilt trip of like, oh, you going to be with them sedity ass, da 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 da. And, you know, you ain't going to be like us down here. You're going to bring up your nose at us, as opposed to, you know, pulling up the next person. So I think of stuff like that. And then the biggest thing is, I always think about my vices or my hobbies to keep me grounded that are healthy. So like, I'm a gamer. I've said it. Me and brother, I can tell you, we can run the fade on 2K. Listen, anybody try to touch us on 2K 2-on-2s, you're gonna get washed every single time. Just tell
you. Yes, sir. Talk about it.
But you know, between that and then, you know, just sometimes journaling, sometimes, especially with my workouts, like those things give me the endorphins to say, okay, take the rest of the day. Take it one day at a time. Just keep going. That's all you have to do, is just take it one day at a time. And if you take it one day at a time, things get lighter. As long as you don't put too much on your plate or try to think, oh, I got to think of 6 months in advance or a year in advance or 8 months. I got to think of this. I got to do all these things. No, take it one day at a time and treat every day as if you're last. If you can do those two things, that's what will keep you going. And drinks. A lot of drinks.
And libations.
I think being born with HIV causes me to remember that I am here for a reason. I have made it. I wasn't supposed to live past 2. So there are times when I get upset with myself for feeling the way I feel. And maybe sometimes I don't feel that I'm allowed to feel the way that I'm feeling, because there are people that are worse off, and there are people that didn't make it this far, or there are different things. And one of the things I have to remind myself is always to, like, not beat myself up, although it's much easier to do said than done. But I think remembering my past, and similar to what Mr. Smith and Brother X said, but remembering where we came from and remembering all the people that put in the work and remembering that we are loved, and who loves you, and who, bigger than what you're working for, but just, we've come so far, and there are many people that are just not blessed to still be on this earth for whatever reasons. And some people can't serve. It takes them, unfortunately. And I am too much of a happy person and too much of a positive light in this world for me to go under when I'm at my lowest, even though it does not feel like it sometimes.
I feel you on that. Feel you on that. I think.
Oh, and babies, of course, because babies are just the greatest light on earth, and the giggles and the funniness and watching them understand something is one of my favorite joys on this earth, to be 1,000% honest.
Oh yeah, quick shout out to our trainer. You know who you are. Shout out to our little, the baby empanada. You know who you are.
What up, empanada?
We got mad love for you. Happy belated birthday. But I think that's a good place to leave it. I think our transparent moment of the week is going to be just kind of think and meditate and like journal about these questions, have those conversations with your friends, and just kind of just delve into those different things, man. You'd be interested it is interesting if you take the time to be introspective about these things. And matter of fact, I'm gonna give you a bonus one. I know I said we were only gonna do one more question, but here's a question I want you to think about. Maybe you can tell us in the comments on our social media about this, but let us know this last question. Why do you keep lighting yourself on fire to keep others warm? Again, that is, why do you keep lighting yourself on fire to keep others warm? That's one kind of like start as a journaling point. So we're not going to get into it to this episode, but if you really like these conversations or deep questions, let us know on all of our social media at TheTNTPod123 on Twitter, Truth and Transparency Pod on Instagram, Truth and Transparency Pod on TikTok, The Truth and Transparency Podcast on Facebook, The Truth and Transparency Podcast on YouTube, and always hit us up with any of your like questions you want us to answer on our email at truthandtransparencypod123@gmail.com. And for the culture scientists, for Mr. Smith, for myself, and all of our loving supporters, if this podcast gets no bigger than what it is right now, they are forever grateful. We are forever grateful. And the immortal words of my father, eat the elephant one bite at a time. Peace. Nothing? Yeah, you ain't got nothing? Oh, okay.